Hello, AWTR Mill Spouses. This is Brooklyn Morgan, Army Wives Network's Special Projects Coordinator. Each week, our mission is to empower military spouses, veterans, and family members across the globe, and we are inviting you to support us in that mission. After you listen to this week's episode, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating and review. You can then send us a screenshot of the review at info@armywifenetwork.com, or feel free to send us that screenshot in a DM to us on Facebook or Instagram with our handle @armywifenetwork to receive a special in real life gift as a thank you on behalf of Army Wife Network. We appreciate your engagement and support. And now it is time for this week's new episode.
Attention, Mill Spouses, families, and service members. It's now time for another empowering episode of Army Wife Talk Radio, the leading and longest running podcast of its kind. AWTR is here to engage, educate, and encourage you by sharing dynamic interviews, social media connections, news, and empowering military life information. Here are your AWTR hosts, your Army Wife Network Command Team.
Hello, listeners. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Army Wife Talk Radio. I'm your host, Kayla Gebline, Army Wife Network Social Media Coordinator. And co-hosting with me today is Annie Pierce, our podcast production assistant. We're looking forward to sharing some empowering segments and resources with you today. This is show number 850 of the leading and longest running podcast of its kind.
Thanks, Kayla. Hello, everyone. We have some great stuff in store for you in this episode. In fact, it's a double feature. First up, we'll be sharing some of our weekly resources to help you excel in your Mill Spouse life. Then in just a bit, we'll hear from Army Wife Network owner and commander, Sherita Knobloch, as she chats with author Ronald Edward Negra about his book, Waves of Hope. Later in the show, you'll hear our second empowering interview with Sarah Caballero, a financial advisor at First Command Financial Services.
I'm looking forward to hearing both of these interviews. Annie, what's new with you?
We are actually heading to Niagara Falls coming next week.
So, oh my gosh, the American side or the Canadian side?
So the American side at first, but we're hoping to go to the Canadian side.
Yes, the Canadian side is the best. I went to school right across the river, like in Niagara University. So I lived in Niagara Falls for 6 years. Yep.
That's so cool.
Yes. Yeah. Niagara Falls is amazing. It's one of my favorite places. It never gets old.
So I'm going to have to email you for some tips.
Please do. Yeah, that was great. The best, honestly, when we would go, because I mean, the drinking age in Canada is only 19. So when we were in college, we would just walk across the bridge, and it was so cool walking across. I'm not sure what the rules are right now, but walking across the bridge to go to the Canadian side was super cool.
Oh, you can just walk across the bridge. I didn't even know that.
Yep. You bring your passports, and then it's like, you just go through customs like normal. Like you just walk through and they look at your passport and let you in. And it's so cool because you walk right over the river. It's awesome.
Oh, that is such a neat experience. I'm going to check it out. Hopefully it's still open right now.
Yes, I hope so too. That would be, I mean, my parents were just there a couple of weeks ago and they had a great time. So I'm assuming, your trip should be great. That's so cool.
I'm excited. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I don't have anything exciting like that coming up. So you feel free to email me about whatever. That's great.
What's new with you?
Not much. Just finishing up some home projects and hanging out for now. My husband's in between instructor courses, so he's got a lot more free time, which is nice because now I can take advantage. Nice. But yeah, nothing crazy here.
I loved hearing your Mill Spouse empowerment moment about the DIY remodel.
Oh yeah,
you had some great tips because my husband and I want to do that when we actually buy a house. So
yes,
I took some notes for later.
Yes, yeah, it definitely it's a very fun experience, but it definitely takes a lot out of you, especially when you got a big project, but it's nice to have like little ones because those make you feel like accomplished, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I'm ready to hear about our first guest, Ronald Negra. How about you? Let's listen in.
Hello, listeners. This is Sharita Knobloch, your Army Wife Network owner and commander. For this episode of Army Wife Talk Radio, we're chatting with author Ronald Edward Negra about communication with POW families from World War II. Ron was inspired to write the book Waves of Hope by his mother, Agnes Joan Negra, after learning of her extraordinary role in World War II. Agnes communicated with the families of American soldiers who had been captured as prisoners of war. Ron's mother always believed it was so important for Americans to understand the sacrifices of these POW men, as well as the fear, anxiety, sadness, and hope that their families experienced. Ron, welcome to Army Wife Talk Radio. Very excited to chat with you today.
Thank you, Sharita. It's a pleasure to be with you and on the Army Wife Network. I'm very happy to be here.
Well, your book is truly inspiring. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I read it several months ago, actually, back around Memorial Day. So it was extremely poignant then. And I think that your mother's story is undoubtedly one for the history books. So, but before I get too far ahead, and I don't want to give too much away, let's rewind and kind of start from the beginning. Can you share with our listeners a little bit about the book Waves of Hope?
Sure, I'd be happy to. As you stated, Sharita, very nicely, Waves of Hope is a story. It's about a young housewife, newly married woman, my mother, and with a baby, and her listening to, using a shortwave radio, to listen to Radio Berlin. The German government was just starting mm-hmm. to announce American flyers that were shot down and put into prisoner of war camps across Europe. No names or information had been given out for a long period of time. And now we're in the 1942-43 period. My mother heard about them announcing names. They announced five names every night at 6 o'clock. And she got herself a shortwave radio and she would tune in and write down the names that were mentioned of the prisoners of war. And it said something like Ron Negra, Wichita, Kansas. And she would write a letter to the family of Ron Negra, Wichita, Kansas, and the letters were delivered, which was wonderful, by the post office. And she notified the families that she heard the name of their loved one, not knowing whether it was a son, a husband, a brother, a father, that she heard their name and the prisoner was alive and in a prisoner of war camp. The American flyer was alive in a prisoner of war camp. So that's how the story began. She wrote over 300 letters. She never expected a response back from anyone. And she received over 200 responses back. Mm-hmm.
I thought that was one of the coolest parts is kind of the receipt, the gratitude, the back and forth, because it's just obviously such a different era. When you think about, that was one thing that really stood out to me as I read the book was how incredibly different communication was in World War II versus now. You know, now we're inundated with information, probably, I would say, too much. You know, it's always somewhere. There's no filters. It's, you know, there's real news, there's fake news, there's all kinds of stuff. But back then, her taking the initiative to write to essentially strangers to say, I heard this person's name on the shortwave radio as a POW, but they're alive and well. It's so interesting to think about. And so I'm interested, Ron, can you tell me even a little bit more about your mom, Agnes Joan Negra?
Yes, it's Agnes Joan Verdi, was born in Boston and raised there to an immigrant family. And my grandfather was a deep sea fisherman. He was a commercial fisherman. So she grew up in that environment, and she loves to tell the story about that she grew up in the Back Bay section of Boston in what today is a townhouse. And she looked out the window and she would see the fishing boats coming in out of Boston Harbor, wondering if that was her father coming home because he was gone for long periods of time. That was their life. My grandmother would go down to the harbor and sew the fishing nets. It was a Portuguese population that were the deep sea fishermen. They also went out of Gloucester, Mass. That's where they ended up. But she would sit with these ladies and so, you know, put the kids in school and or take the little ones with her. My mother was the sixth child of 11 total children. Wow. So it was quite a large family. Mm-hmm. And she eventually moved to New Jersey in 1938 with her family. My grandfather only knew fish. He was almost lost at sea in a major storm. And he said that was the end of going out to sea. So he moved his family to New Jersey where he had a sister, opened up a fish market. And that's how my mother met my father, who was a a native New Jerseyan. She met him at a wedding, actually. And that's how that story continued.
What an interesting path she took from the beginning to where essentially the story of your book kind of picks up her inspiration behind that World War II POW communication. So what would you say inspired her during World War II to write to those POW families?
Well, she had some experiences with emotions. And when the war broke out, there were some things going on with the family, immediately with the family. And these emotions that she felt she believed were also within the families of the prisoners of war. And as she learned more about the prisoners, she decided, I'm going to write to them and I'm going to share with them that their loved one is alive, but also share that she understands their emotions. My grandfather was almost lost at sea. And that was the first major, she was 6 years old. That was the first major emotional experience that she had. And she remembers very vividly. They had a church service for him, even though the body was never found. And she knew what his loved ones were going through. And she just said to herself, I can't imagine what the families, the wives, the mothers, the sisters, the brothers, the family members in general were going through learning that their loved one was missing in action, because that's really most of the information that they had from the War Department at that point in time. So that really inspired her to work with them, to talk to them, and to give them hope that their loved one was still alive by saying, I heard his name mentioned on a shortwave radio. He's alive and he's well. So that was really the inspiration behind the book.
I think that's really neat how she took her own experience with her father kind of being MIA, not necessarily in a war combat situation, but in a similar circumstance of just being potentially lost at sea, and kind of transposing those experiences onto those here on the home front, wondering if their brother, son, dad, you know, uncle, et cetera, when they're just like MIA, like, you know, we always say as military spouses, no news is good news. Well, that's in 2021. That wasn't the same back in World War II in 1942 and whatnot. So I want to know, how did she find out about her experience of writing letters to the POWs?
Well, as she was approaching her 100th birthday, I was going through, my mother's extremely organized. Okay. And she's a saver, and, but very organized, not clutter. And I was going through a lot of boxes in her home. And I came across this box that said 1946, and it was sealed. And it was a large box. And I said, Mom, what's this all about? And she said, well, they're the letters that I wrote to American POW families. And I said, well, start from the beginning, because I had never heard the story. She never discussed it with anyone. And it was really quite news to me, but it became a story as she started explaining what she did. So those letters were in this box sealed for 70 plus years. Wow. And as I went through the letters and I read the emotions of the family's responses back to her, thanking her and showing their gratitude for hearing from her. Many of those letters, as you probably read, said, your word was the first word that we heard that our son was alive, or my husband was a captain on a B-17 fortress. And your word assures us of hope that he may make it back after the war. So that's really how that all came about. And then she started, I decided I was going to interview her at least two or three times a week. We had moved within 15, 20 minutes of where she lived at the time. And I decided that I wanted to hear as much about the story as possible in her words. And again, my mother's factual. She's extremely honest with high integrity. So I knew she would not, you know, explore areas that didn't exist, that she didn't exaggerate the story. So as I got into it with her and learned more about how everything came about, not only from the shortwave radio, but what happened before that and what happened after that, family-wise, and in the town that she and my dad lived in, it became quite a story. Mm. And that was my interest level.
Wow. That's really cool. And I love, you know, you're not the first one that we've talked to this season on the air about kind of that legacy of, you know, a parent many years ago writing or communicating or, you know, preserving that story, just being like, hey, Mom, what's in this box? And then realizing essentially the treasure trove that you've stumbled on of history that has been preserved for 7 decades, which is absolutely amazing. Well, Ron, we've talked about kind of your mom's inspiration to start that experience of writing to POWs, but I want to know what inspired you to write the book Waves of Hope.
As I learned more about what she did, I was really enamored that being a young wife whose husband went to war and she had a baby, mm-hmm. I was very much inspired about her story. And her 100th birthday was coming up. And my wife and I, Val and I said, okay, what are we going to do for a 100th birthday party? Yes, we're going to have a celebration and family and friends and all that. But what can we give to her that really has true meaning? So she had no idea what I was doing during the interview process with her. As I wrote the story, I became more inspired that this had to be told because it's history. And we decided for her 100th birthday that I would have a book printed, not thinking it would ever be published. That wasn't my intent, but that I would present that book to her and to her family at the celebration. And that was really our goal. That was my goal and Val's goal too.
So cool. And so side note, what was your mom's reaction to all this? Like how she responded, and she's getting ready for another birthday soon, right? 102?
Yes, 102, November 13th is 102.
Excellent. Happy early birthday to Agnes. That's so great.
Thank you.
Well, what was her response to this book?
She was totally shocked. She had no idea that what I was doing, you know, as I was going through the interview process, and no one ever said anything. I never said anything. No one really knew. So she was, she cried and she said, this was no big deal, Ron, what I did.
Oh.
You know, it was something she never expected. The major thing here was that she never expected anyone to respond to her. So she was so happy that all this was put together in a story, her story, really. And it included my dad, my father's brother, who was an American flyer and was shot down over Yugoslavia during the war. And that further encouraged her to write more letters, listen for more names of prisoners. She was astonished that people started giving her feedback that it was very, very important what she did, especially as a young woman, mother, newly mother, you know, new mother, that kind of a thing. And she'll say to this day, if you spoke with her on the phone, she'd say to you, this was no big deal. You know, they're making it a big deal. It's just something that I thought needed to be done.
Oh, well, I have to say, it really is an inspiring story. And listeners, it's a relatively easy read. You know, there's tons of pictures as far as like actual pictures of these letters and the responses and the envelopes, which was really, really cool to see. And it really is. It almost seems so interesting that you're like, this feels like fiction, but it's obviously not. It's 100% based on a true story and the memories of your mom, Agnes. So, Ron, thank you so much for sharing the inspiration, not only behind this book that you've written, but also behind your mom's story. It goes without saying that war is undoubtedly heart-wrenching and full of anguish, but it's also so empowering to discuss something that comes out of war that gives us hope, whether that's in the 1940s or 2021. So listeners, if you'd like to connect with Ron, Val, or learn more about his mom's story, Agnes Joan Negra, the Waves of Hope book, you can connect online on ronaldedwardnegra.com, or you can grab a copy of this empowering book on Amazon. Just search for Waves of Hope, and it is the first entry that comes up there. Stay tuned for the rest of our interview after this quick commercial break. We will be right back in a few moments.
Engage, educate, encourage, empower. Advertise. AWN has many opportunities for promotion of your brand, service, or product, including web creatives, blog posts, social media promotion, giveaways, and podcast audio commercials. Email empower@armywifenetwork.com to get started. We sincerely thank you for your support to empower military spouses, families, and their service members around the globe.
Welcome back, listeners. We're continuing our conversation with Ron about his mother's heartwarming story as she communicated with World War II POWs. So let's chat a little bit more about your family. Ron, how did the war affect Agnes and her husband, August's family, as she went through this process?
Okay, her husband, my dad, went off to war. He was, as soon as Pearl Harbor happened, the next day he tried to enlist in the Navy, even though my mother was pregnant. And he tried to get in the Navy, and that's the first time he understood that he was colorblind. So the Navy rejected him, and they told him to go home and that he would be hearing from another branch of the service, i.e. the Army, and he did. My mother, who was quite a patriot, just implored him not to go in because he was given an initial deferment because his wife was expecting a baby. So he waited, and my sister was born, and he would go down to the town hall in a little town called Nutley, New Jersey, and say goodbye to his friends. And it was more of a daily, weekly occurrence because they were leaving to go into the service. And these were, my father was a native of the town and knew everyone. It was a small town. And he would hug them and wish them well. And my mother said it just tore at him that all these young men were going off to war and that he wasn't able to contribute. So he was working temporarily in a defense plant, waiting for my sister to get to a year of age, or less than that, I think. And then he went to the Army and he decided to join the Army. How it affected him and my mother was that he was in the service and in Europe, and he was at the Battle of the Bulge, and that's where he was wounded. So he was missing for, my mother just stopped getting letters from him. And the most amazing thing to me was that she did that. She was going through that, and she was still writing letters to families of, of those missing, you know. He was wounded at the Battle of the Bulge, and it's quite a story from there. He was left for dead. His platoon was killed. There was only one soldier besides himself that he was unconscious, but he was alive. And the underground rescued him. The Belgian underground came by and was checking the Army soldiers' bodies for identification, and they heard him moan. They then brought him to their home in Belgium because he was unable to walk, as well as this other gentleman, the other soldier, and nursed him back for a few weeks. And they then got him back to the American 95th American Hospital, which was in northeastern France, and he was there for 44 days. My mother still had no idea.
Oh my gosh.
Quite a story came out of that, in that he finally, there was no letter writing allowed or no information allowed to leave the hospital because of security reasons. And a lot of that area was still had German infantry units in different areas. So it was really quite a secrecy type of thing. Finally, my father convinced, after 44 days, a French nurse, his nurse, to write a letter to my mother and to use whatever means she could to get the letter out, which she did. So picture this one from an emotional standpoint. My mother gets a letter, and the letter is in French. So my mother had absolutely no idea what the letter said, and there wasn't anyone in her neighborhood that spoke French. So she thought of this, and she said, you know, I'm going to go back to Nutley High School, where my father went and graduated from. She remembered that he had 2 years of French, which helped him in Belgium, by the way, when he was being taken care of by that family, because they spoke both German and French. Anyway, she brought there, and the teacher that he had for French opened up the letter and read it to her. And the first line was, "Your husband is alive."
Oh my gosh.
That's how she heard that my dad was alive. So I thought that was quite emotional and quite interesting.
Wow.
At the same time, his brother, who was shot down over Yugoslavia and taken in as a POW, escaped, his brother John. And he was found by the Yugoslavian underground and hidden out for months to protect him from the German troops that were looking for him, and he, and as well as other flyers that had escaped. But the good news is that he came home safe. So that was another emotional thing for the entire family.
I would say so. Just, it takes a lot to leave me speechless, but goodness gracious, that is just incredible. I'm so thankful that you shared that with us, and what an experience for your mom, just the strength as a military spouse that she had all those years ago to just be like, I haven't heard from him. And again, it's not like today where you can call or get notifications from the DOD at a rapid pace or anything like that. Wow. Just wow. That's incredible. One thing that I saw was really interesting in the book, Waves of Hope. Many of the letters are addressed back to your mom, Agnes, as Dear Mr. Negra. Can you talk to us a little bit more about that?
Yes. That was the first thing I questioned when I started reading the letters with my mom. She said, you know, remember the times, Ron. She felt that a man's name had more credibility than a woman's name. And it's really, you know, in today's day age, it's, I guess we can kind of understand it. But back then, kind of men ruled the world, so to speak. So she decided when she started writing the letters that she wanted to be taken seriously because the American public was being told by our government not to believe everything they read or heard. Because there were just a lot of things going on out in the country and a lot of misinformation. So she decided that she would put my father's name to it. Later on, she started using her own name because people were saying to her, Agnes, you've got a lot of credibility here and you've got all these people to respond to you. So they're taking you serious. But many of the responses that she got at the beginning were all addressed to Mr. Negra because that's how she signed her letters. Mm.
I feel like just the legacy that both of your parents, with their service, with their support, with their communication on behalf of POWs to their families, is just so rich with history and that legacy that they're leaving. I would love to know, do you have any other interesting stories maybe to tell regarding your mom or your dad?
Yes, this was quite interesting. When I was interviewing my mother, I said, Mom, tell me the story about how you heard about Pearl Harbor. Their routine was every Sunday they would go to church, their Catholic church, and then go over to my grandmother's house. There were four brothers, and they would go have dinner at my grandmother's house and share their experiences, that kind of thing. And they were there, and my mother said that they had dinner, and the men went into the parlor, as they called it then, and put on the radio, WOR radio, and they were listening to a football game. And my mother said they were listening to the New York Giants Brooklyn Dodgers football game. And I said, Mom, the Brooklyn Dodgers were a baseball team. They weren't a football team. She said, Ron, trust me, they were a football team. And that's the game they were listening to when they broke away from the game. She said for 30 seconds, and an announcement was made that Pearl Harbor was bombed. Of course, everyone looked around and they got the globe, you know, to find out where Pearl Harbor was.
Right.
And some of them, of course, knew that, you know, the Navy base and all that. So Val and I just, you know, we kept saying to each other, why did my mother get this confused? Well, Val and I went to a museum called Info Age. We were invited there and a gentleman had purchased my book and read it and was so thrilled with it that he invited us to this museum in New Jersey called Info Age. And Val and I had no idea anything about this. It's quite extraordinary. And it's really the history of radio, shortwave radio, TV. And it's quite interesting to go through it. Anyway, he said to us while we were there, would you like to listen to the actual broadcast on WOR?
What?
We have a radio in a parlor that's set up as 1941.
Wow.
And we said, yes. And we
yes, please.
We sat there and we kind of pinched ourselves, Sharita, because the game was on and it was the New York Giants Brooklyn Dodgers game. And you know, this play, that play. And then they said, well, we break for this interruption. This is an announcement that Pearl Harbor has been bombed by the Japanese and there are many lives lost and all that. But they said on the thing that was the Brooklyn Dodgers, New York Giants football game that was on at the time. And we looked at each other. We said, darn, my mother is right again.
Right.
She is. She's got a memory that's incredible. It really is.
She is on point. She did not mix anything up. And oh, wow. That's so cool. What a historical experience, and just affirming that your mom's experience was 110% all there and accurate, even for things that maybe made you all raise your eyebrows for a minute, be like, is that right? Maybe she's getting her lines crossed. Nope. 100%. 100%.
Incredible.
Way to go, Agnes. That's very neat.
I want to tell you another cute story, if I may.
Yeah.
Their postman, their mailman, who they called a postman back in those days, would come around and he had a whistle. And my mom said that a lot of the men in the neighborhood were in the service. And if a letter came from one of the soldiers to the family, he would stand outside the house and blow the whistle. And that's how they knew they were getting a letter from their loved one. So my dad was missing. And then in the American hospital, before she found out what was going on for 44 days, She listened for that whistle every day and she never heard it. And then finally one day he blew the whistle and she said she went running down and hugged him. They were jumping up and he said, "You have a letter from your husband." And this was the letter from the French nurse, by the way.
Right.
They were jumping up and down. Mom said it was kind of like New Year's Eve. You know, everybody was hugging. The neighbors came running over and she was so thrilled. And that mailman was a friend of the family. Aww. He used to deliver to my grandparents' house as well. And my grandmother always made chocolate chip cookies, which he loved. So he was part of the family. So he was as emotional as my mother was, which I thought was a really cute story.
That is a very cute story. And I can only imagine as she, you know, ripped open that letter and was like, "Oh, it's in French. I'll be back later. I'll let you guys know what it says. Hang on. I think this is good news," but what an interesting component, like how the post office workers, the postmen worked and played in that experience, blowing the whistle essentially. So very, very cool. Well, Ron, can you tell us what kind of reaction has Waves of Hope caused?
We're pinching ourselves again because, you know, we didn't know how this would be. Actually, I just want to step back. When I wrote the book, I had it printed by a printer, never expecting it to be published. And Val was sitting next to a lady on the beach and she said, "Where's Ron?" And Val said, "Oh, he's always working, changing this manuscript that he wrote. He's up in the room doing that." And she said, "Oh, what's it about?" And Val told her, and she said, "I'd love to read it." So, you know, I was very protective of this, protective of my mother, especially, you know. Anyway, it was a long lasting friend. So we decided to let her read it. And she said, "I have a friend that's a publisher who would love this story.
What?
Would you mind if I shared it?" So that's how that happened. So now reactions. We've heard from people all over the world and New Zealand and England and Aruba. We've just received so many messages from them, from different people. Mom was approaching her 101st birthday and Val decided, okay, we got to do something to commemorate that, but something that we know what she would really appreciate. Mm-hmm. So you could have given my mother a check for $1 million and she would have said, "That's nice." However, as we heard from people, they were sending us pictures of themselves holding Waves of Hope and giving their commentary about how much they liked the book and those kinds of things. Actually, there was a woman from Virginia. It was the first person that we heard from. And she sent a picture of herself holding the book, telling us how much she enjoyed it. So Val decided she was going to put together memory albums of all the pictures we received and put them in books for my mother. So we would give them to her for her 101st birthday, because she kept saying to us, "Is anybody ever going to read this book?" You know, we never really gave, we never gave her any information. You know? again, it's the no big deal story, you know? Val put together these memory albums, which she's still doing, by the way. And she got my mother, she's on book number 3 now, and they're quite large. But anytime someone contacts us, many people we don't know, we'll just say, "Gee, we just sent us a picture holding the book." The greater majority of the people said yes. You know, we get some of those comments that are, "Oh, I look old, my hair's gray," you know, all that stuff. So, but many, many people know that it's for her and not for anyone else. Okay. But a story off of that, I want to share with you. There's so many. We received a comment from a man from Long Island, and he sent us a picture of himself sitting on a family room sofa with his grandson, who I think was about 8 or 9 years old. And he wrote to us and said how much he was enjoyed reading the book and also sharing it with his grandson. And his quote was, "You're never too young to learn about greatness." Oh. We were just absolutely floored by that, that he would take the time to do that and introduce his son and all of that. So beyond that, we've been in several newspapers. We've been on CBS News, and someone there picked up the book and read it and thought it was a great story. And Sharita, you would appreciate this, knowing what you do to prepare for these podcasts and all. We got a call one morning from CBS News and said, "We will be at your mother's at 12 noon. This was right when COVID started decreasing, and we didn't expose my mother to anyone. She had never been interviewed.
Right.
We just wouldn't do that. And the woman, the reporter at CBS News said, "We're going to be there at noon. Ooh. We'd like to interview your mother and take some pictures and a video and all that." And we accepted it. We said, okay, fine. As long as you're masked and you keep your distance and all that. We actually did it outside. We wouldn't allow them to come into the house. Anyway, we did that. So we've been on New Jersey 12 News, which is a state news program. We've got a lot of exposure from people that heard about the book, everyday people that decided they wanted to expose us to others. So it's been quite interesting and quite nice. We got some wonderful quotes. I don't know if you'd like to hear anything like that. This was one of the first ones that came, and it's actually on the back of the book. This is from Mrs. W.H. Smith from Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania, and it's dated June 21, 1943. It said, this is addressed to my mother, as long as there are Americans like you who are doing such wonderful work and giving such wonderful service to our fellow Americans, I'm sure victory will be ours. Mm. And you could be sure you and others like you have played a vital part. I want to thank you for, on behalf of both myself and my son. Yeah, very touching,
Yes.
The people would take the time to do that.
Absolutely. I wish, we don't do video podcast, or we don't do video on these podcasts, obviously, since they're audio only. But if you could see me now, other than the fact that I'm wearing workout clothes, I'm smiling just so big because I'm just imagining three giant memory albums of people snapping selfies or taking pictures with the book. And I'm like writing notes to be like, hey, go put this on my list to do, because I would love to send you guys a picture, because it was just so poignant for me to read it, around Memorial Day. And also, as we continue to navigate these choppy waters with the global war on terror and what that looks like for modern day mill spouses, to just connect with someone who is doing something so profound, even though she says it's a no big deal story. That 1940s humility, giving credit to others or, deferring to her husband's name back in the day. I just think that is so, so empowering and just gives me all the warm and fuzzies to,
You would make our day and my mother's day if you would send us your picture with the book.
All right.
And you would be in the album. You'd be right there.
I'm writing it down. Take selfie. I've got some ideas. I like doing creative things. So, watch your mail in the coming weeks.
Thank you.
There's going to be something good coming your way. Well, Ron, our time together is about to wrap up, but I would love for you to remind people where they can go to get more information about your empowering resources, your journey, your mom's journey, and also even snag a copy of this book.
Great. My website is probably the easiest thing to access. It's Ronald, R-O-N-A-L-D, E-D-W-A-R-D, Edward Negra, N-E-G-R-A.com. And if you go there and go toward the bottom, you'll say, would you like to, information, or would you like to contact Ron, or would you like to order the book? And there's links there for Amazon.com and also BarnesandNoble.com, where the book could be accessed. That's probably the easiest thing to do.
Mm-hmm. All right. And listeners, if you missed that, don't worry at all, because we will have an outbound link to Ron's website on armywifenetwork.com when this podcast goes live. So you can catch it there as well. And it will also hit social media when this podcast goes live as well. So Ron, our primary mission here at Army Wife Network is empowerment. So one of my favorite parts of the show is always asking our guests what empowerment means to them. How would you complete the sentence? Empowerment is.
I thought about this from your note, and we believe empowerment is taking charge, as we believe my mother did, of a situation and making good things happen for others and for herself. Empowering, the empowerment of women today is really at the front burner. And I encourage that all the time. I was in management for a major healthcare company, and every woman that came in front of me, I would talk about empowerment, empowering themselves, getting involved and doing things for people. I think my mother exemplified that. But she had no idea that she was doing it,
Right.
That's not how she viewed it, but that's how a lot of other people have viewed it since the book came out. So I am thrilled that your mission talks about empowerment for anyone. I think that's outstanding.
Yeah, we were really intentional when we created the pillars for Army Wife Network. Army Wife Talk Radio has been on the air for 16 years now, which is just crazy because podcasts haven't been around forever. But as we were creating the pillars for AWN, really thinking about what as military spouses do we need the most when it comes to resources. And Ron, I think you just nailed it when you mentioned that empowerment is taking charge of a situation and making good things happen for others, because that's what we want to do here at Army Wife Network. The mill spouse journey is incredibly rewarding, but it also comes with a large number of challenges. And so instead of focusing on the deprivation component of I don't get to necessarily pick where I live or when my husband is or isn't going to be here, etc., we get to focus on the things we do have the opportunity to experience, and also how we can empower, encourage, educate, and engage with others in our circles, and even those military spouses who've gone before us, like your mom. So thank you so much for coming on the show, talking about such a touching and inspiring topic. We're just so glad you decided to share your mom's story with the world, and of course with us today. Especially in today's climate, we could use more stories like this one.
Thank you, Sherita. A big thanks from my mother, my wife Val, and myself. Thank you for doing what you do. And we really applaud that. And we hope we can be in contact in the future as well.
Absolutely. I look forward to working together in the future also, and can't wait to keep watching this book, Waves of Hope, continue to make waves both in and outside the military circle. So thanks again. And now let's go ahead and pop back over to our host to hear what they thought of today's conversation in the studio. Back to you, ladies.
What a great interview. Thanks to Ron for sharing such an inspiring story with us this week. Again, if you'd like to connect with him, check out his website, ronaldedwardnegra.com. That's ronaldedwardnegra.com. If you missed that, no worries. All that info will be in our show notes on armywifenetwork.com under the AWTR tab. And actually, due to technical difficulties, we will now have a surprise guest, Brittany, who will help me to finish out the show as a co-host. Welcome, Brittany.
Thanks for having me on. I'm usually the person editing the podcast, so you probably very rarely hear my voice. But unfortunately, Kayla is not going to be in the rest of the episode due to technical difficulties. So we're just going to pick up from here. Sorry about that.
Ronald's mom, she has such an inspiring story.
Absolutely. And it's just funny how the entire time she just never really thought it was that big of a deal, when she probably had a pretty profound effect on, like, this is real American history.
I know. It's crazy to me that she thought it wouldn't be such a big deal. She was the first person that these families had heard from about their soldiers.
And the fact that she had this locked away for so many years, and, you know, if it wasn't for Ron, like, we would not know about this. And, you know, this is definitely an inspiring story to share with people, how, like, one person could have such a profound effect on so many families and, you know, their loved ones during a time when, you know, especially communication was very, like, scarce.
It's so hard for me to imagine, because we have communication at our fingertips now, you know, so to think that we couldn't have that, but it's crazy. He just found it in a box, you know, he was just going through boxes, and thankfully he was able to talk to her about it and got more stories about it.
It just makes me wonder how many other amazing stories are out there waiting to be discovered simply because they're just in a box somewhere, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, such a privilege to share empowering interviews with our Army Wife Network fans and followers. Speaking of empowerment, let's hear from Amanda, bringing us our weekly Empowerment Patrol report.
Hello, Army Wife Talk Radio listeners. I'm Amanda Bicknies, bringing you this week's Empowerment Patrol Report. Today, we are showcasing two of our volunteers who are MRE winners, which, by the way, that stands for Motivated and Ready to Empower. First up, we have Chrissy Gibbs, our content curator here at Army Wife Network. Chrissy married her husband in 2010 and jumped right into her mill spouse role. She knew that life would be more adventurous and sometimes more difficult, but it would always be worth it. She had previously received her teaching degrees from Niagara University in special education and spent a few years teaching. But once she began having children, she chose to put those talents to work in her own home. Chrissy is a mother to 4 energetic boys and 1 husky pup, who's also a male. So you could say she's the queen of the castle. Chrissy and her family are currently living in Fort Leavenworth, but will have another PCS on the horizon. In her free time, you can find her working out, at a play date with close friends, on the hunt for the next geocache, or hiding away binge watching her favorite guilty pleasure TV shows. She is super excited to be a part of the Army Wife Network team and can't wait to connect with more new friends. Next up, we want to recognize a member from our band of bloggers, Scott Shumsky. Scott hails from the former Republic of Vermont, where his family goes back more than 7 generations. Currently, he lives in the Bavarian region of Germany with his wife of more than 15 years and their 3 children. Scott has visited all 50 U.S. states and 20 countries. He is currently working on a set of universally accepted parameters with his son, Hunter, to help travelers determine if they can count a destination as having been visited. Before moving back to the U.S., Scott plans on visiting all 27 European Union member nations. Before leaving this world, he hopes to visit every nation on Earth. You can find him on both Twitter and Instagram at Scott Shumsky, or on his website where he documents his travels, marathons, national park visits, and thoughts on life. So much thanks goes out to our team members, Chrissy and Scott, for doing their part to empower military families all across the globe. Until next time, I'm Amanda Bickneys, reminding you that we are never completely alone on this military life journey.
Congratulations to Chrissy and Scott. Listeners, if you or someone you know is empowering those around you, head over to armywifenetwork.com to nominate them. On our website, look under the menu for Get Involved and click the tab Everyday Empowerment or AWN Empowers. You can also view our previous winners in our Empowerment Gallery.
Now, as promised, it's time for the double part of this week's double feature program. Let's listen in to Sarah Caballeros, financial advisor at First Command Financial Services.
Welcome back, listeners. Thanks for tuning in to another empowering interview with Army Wife Network. This is once again Sherita Knobloch, AWN's owner and commander. And since you're hearing my voice for a second time today, that can only mean one thing. It's double feature day. For the second interview today, we are talking about all things new school year and finances. I know from my personal perspective, it's always fun to prepare kids for the fresh start, but the expenses that come with it can sometimes be daunting. So joining us today to talk about how to be smart about back to school spending is Sarah Caballero, a financial advisor from First Command. First Command is a longtime partner of Army Wife Network. They are a financial planning firm focused on serving the financial needs of our nation's active duty military families. Thank you so much for joining us today, Sarah. Very excited to chat with you about back to school things. So would love to hear, tell us a little bit about your role at First Command.
Thank you, Sherita. I'm a financial coach at First Command. So I help military families develop a comprehensive financial plan, and I also help you implement it. As life and priorities change, I coach the families I work with to make sure that their financial behaviors are in sync with their goals.
Well, you have some firsthand experience with this topic today, and I sort of do too. So tell me a little bit about your family.
I do. I'm an Army veteran and a military spouse. We're currently stationed at Fort Rucker, Alabama, the home of Army Aviation. My husband, Adam, and I have 5 kids total, 3 of which live with us. And we actually just sold our home this past week and moved into an RV to start a new adventure.
Wow. That's super exciting.
It is.
What are the ages of your kiddos?
So the ones that live here are 9, 7, and almost 2.
Okay. We are in the same jam right now because I've got 2 and they are 8 and 4. So kind of in that same season of life of that elementary chaos. That about sums it up. Couldn't have said it better myself. It is chaos. And my son went to school this morning, preschool, for 4-year-olds, and he has blue like marker crosses and X's all up and down his arms and his legs and his belly, because that's what he wanted to do last night while I was taking a bath. So I guess that's what I get for engaging in personal hygiene, but chaos sums it up pretty well. We're stationed here at Fort Bliss, and we've been in school for a while now, grateful to be back in person. But I know that as we were getting ready to ramp up for that again, it looked a little bit different this year because many of us had been doing it at home or homeschooling or virtual the last year or so. So today we're going to talk a little bit about that school spending and not just the school supplies, because most of us have probably already conquered those lists, but just the fall expenses, especially as we look at it ramping back up, maybe quote, real life, ramping back up sports and activities and extracurriculars post-COVID. So it goes without saying that over the years, public school spending cuts have resulted in decreased funding for classrooms. And as a result, parents are being asked to pick up the slack. Teachers are also feeling that pain too. Money Magazine reports that teachers spend close to $500 per year on average of their own money to supplement classroom supplies. And in addition to that, parents are also shouldering the burden of their child's participation in school clubs, art programs, and sports, which can make these activities maybe even cost prohibitive for families on a budget.
That's right, Sharita. These expenses definitely add up. But with proper planning, this annual ritual can become manageable and even, dare I say, fun. We have a few tips for how to handle back to school expenses on a budget. One is to take stock. To avoid buying things you already have on hand, you can have your kids make an inventory of supplies you already have, like pens and binders, and also cold weather clothing that still works from last year, like mittens and boots.
Great point. Yes, absolutely. Go through that gigantic bin of clothing from last year, or perhaps that moving box we haven't unpacked since the move. I think it's important to see what works, donate what doesn't, and because that really makes sense and it makes financial sense for all parties involved.
Absolutely. Next is to make a list. List every item in order of importance and price everything online to set a preliminary budget. This is a great exercise for your kids to participate in because it allows them more ownership in the process and teaches them to prioritize. You might be surprised by the level of excitement generated by color-coding folders and binders. And older kids may even consult Pinterest for low-cost customization ideas. Involving your kids also allows you to set the expectation that they'll need to cover anything off list or out of budget, and introduces valuable budgeting skills as well.
I kind of had a chuckle. As you mentioned, you might be surprised at the level of excitement about color-coded folders and binders, but I personally am not surprised because apparently my daughter is just a mini me and she gets just excited about all things new school supplies, backpacks, office supplies. She even has sticky notes because I don't think a third grader needs sticky notes, but you know, I support that. You know, if she's going to have a habit and get excited about something, I'm totally on board. And because I really love the idea of getting kids involved in this. Not only does it help them start to understand that financial sense and using what's around, but also gets them very excited as they take ownership and realize they might have to have some skin in the game and use their own piggy bank savings if they want new items.
That's right. And sales make a difference. I encourage families to do their homework. Be the first to know about sales and promotions by following your go-to stores on social media. And you can set up email alerts as well. They have price comparison apps out there that you can use to make sure you're getting the best deal. And bottom line, shop on post. It's tax-free. Mm-hmm. And before you buy clothes, double-check your school's dress code to make sure that your student is in compliance.
Great points on all fronts there. I have to say, like, getting back into the swing of things with school this year was a little bit different because we weren't entirely sure what the school supply list was going to look for just because things were a little bit delayed here in El Paso. And so we school shop a little bit later, which I don't normally advocate. Usually I'm like, first day of school needs to be boots on the ground. Let's go. But because we were a little bit behind the schedule, we actually saved a good chunk of money by buying a lot of our supplies at some of our local department stores because it was, quote, after school started. You also make a great point about double checking the dress code for schools. These are the things, you know, our kids may want, but it doesn't make a lot of sense if they can't wear it to school, whether that's certain kinds of designs or length of the shorts, or if they actually have to have a uniform. I know some places here in El Paso, some schools do have kind of that dress code uniform. So maybe maybe that's an example of something they perhaps can save up and buy. And as I just mentioned a little bit, timing is a factor too, right?
Yes, absolutely. The third tip is we want to be strategic. So spread your shopping and the spending over several trips. Buy the most urgent items first and then wait on the secondary items. A great example of this is if you know that they're always going to have number two pencils, then buy them throughout the year for the following years and have them stocked up, right? Also recycle. If you have more than one child, buy quality items that can go the distance. It's best to avoid trendy styles, or in the South here, they like to monogram everything. Mm-hmm. If you don't monogram it, then that increases the chances of a peaceful hand-me-down process in the future.
That makes a lot of sense. And I've done that a few times with our kiddos, even with things like alarm clocks. You know, as my daughter outgrows hers and it gets passed down to her brother, like the wake up alarm clock for school has been really helpful. And that's just one less thing that we have to buy. And, you know, in my 8+ years as being a mom, I've learned a lot. And, you know, there is that old saying, mom knows best. So talk to us about that.
Yes, there's actually data that shows moms tend to be more price conscious and motivated to search out deals. I don't think anyone here is surprised about that. In fact, dads spend on average 10% more than moms. We know it's different for every family, though. But if there is a deal hunter in your family, make sure they are leading the charge.
It makes me laugh a little bit because you can totally tell a difference when I'm doing the grocery shopping versus when my husband does. Like he is in it to get a mission, and he might not spend as much as me that trip only because he doesn't get distracted by shiny things in the aisle or, you know, being like, oh yeah, we need toilet paper in addition to, you know, lettuce. But God bless him. I love him to death. He ends up making like 6 or 7 trips, which over a while certainly adds up. And I'm all about efficiency, both with our time and our money. So Sarah, absolutely. I totally agree that this is great advice for our military families who are sending their students back to school this fall. And I'm sure we have listeners today who could use some more tips for their families on how to financially plan for the future if they want, really facing year-round seasons with our lives. So how can someone get in touch with a financial command advisor if they want to get started with that financial plan?
First Command has offices located near most of the major military installations. And our advisors are available to meet safely in person or remotely. Actually, 8 out of 10 of our advisors are veterans or spouses, so we completely understand the life cycle of a military family. The best way to get started is at our website, www.firstcommand.com. Go there and we'll connect you with a local advisor so you can get started.
I say this every time I chat with one of your team members at First Command, and listeners, I'm not just saying this, like First Command has truly done right by us and really set us up for the future. We still have a while before we actually, you know, officially retire, but you know, our Army career is coming to an end in the next few years likely. And you guys have been really, really great for us here in El Paso with Mr. George and really getting us hooked up and not making the process, taking the intimidation out of the process and really empowering us with our finances. So I really appreciate all you're doing with your 180 locations around the world and your employees really understanding the military life. Like they understand how to read an LES and what TSP means and how to work, you know, with what the military has given us. So I think it sounds like a perfect plan of action for our listeners who would like to learn more about all the fantastic resources that First Command has to offer. Sarah, as always with all of your team members, it's always a pleasure having you on our show today. And I just want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule to chat about the financial concerns that families face during our back to school season.
Thanks so much, Sharita. It's been a true honor.
And listeners, again, I can't emphasize this enough. If you would like to learn more about First Command, you can find them online, firstcommand.com, or connect with them on social media via Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at First Command, or search them on LinkedIn at first-command-financial-services, or they even have a YouTube channel at First Command Channel. If you would like to connect directly with advisor Sarah Caballero, you can find her on LinkedIn by searching her name. And if you missed any of those connections, don't worry, we'll have outbound links over on Army Wife Network when this podcast goes live. So you can check that out. You can always also email info@armywifenetwork.com and we can get you hooked up with an advisor ASAP. Thanks again to First Command for sharing this empowering information with our followers, for sponsoring Army Wife Network. And now back to our host in the studio.
Such empowering financial information once again. Thank you, Sarah. Remember, listeners, if you would like to tap into the amazing resources offered by First Command, you can find them online via firstcommand.com or on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at First Command. Brittany, what was your key takeaway from Sarah's interview?
Well, one of my key takes from her interview was like the inventory thing of your own supplies. Because I remember when I was getting school supplies, my mom, for some reason, always kept like a million different notebooks, and they were always like stashed away somewhere. Like some would be in a cubby, some would be in her bedroom, some would be up in a closet. And I think she would always buy new notebooks every year without realizing we still had a stack of fresh notebooks somewhere hidden in the house at pretty much all times. So I definitely agree about like knowing what's in your house, because sometimes you probably have like half of the supplies or things you need, you know, back to school shopping. Definitely. We all kind of have like pencils and pens and notepads and some stray box of crayons somewhere in a house, you know. And these are all things that could just be on a list. And, you know, we could extend this to other things in our life beyond school shopping. You know, sometimes you have a hidden stash of something somewhere in the house that if you keep track of, that could definitely save you money when you go to the store.
Your mom and my mom sound very similar. I actually just went through a bunch of boxes and found like half used notebooks. I don't know why we bought new notebooks every time. It's a good idea to take inventory. I also like the one about getting the kids involved and having them help out. I thought that was great because it helps you and it hopefully helps the kid to understand the cost of everything and helps them to have a little bit of fun too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Like if they feel like they're involved with the process more, right. You know, like that shiny new notebook or new backpack, that feels more like it's their stuff, you know, so they want to take care of it more.
And they get to take charge of that. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Absolutely. Well, listeners, as we reach the end of our show, we invite you to join us every Thursday at noon Eastern for our weekly Facebook Live Mill Spouse Empowerment Moments, which will be converted into a podcast if you need to catch it later. You can also subscribe to our podcast on Apple or Spotify. Be sure to check out our next full-length episode dropping next week featuring military spouse and author Megan Brown as she chats about her new book, Summoned.
Also, another very important note, if you or someone you know has a product or service to share with our listeners and would like to join us on our mission to empower military families, let's chat. Please email empower@armywifenetwork.com.
Finally, if you want to connect with Army Wife Network beyond the podcast, subscribe to our semi-monthly newsletter, The SITREP, on our website at armywifenetwork.com. Just enter your email in the right sidebar. We showcase our top blog posts, upcoming AWTR information, exclusive printables and giveaways, sponsor information, and more.
Listeners, we think that military spouses are some of the strongest, most empowering people on the planet. It is truly an honor to share content with you, no matter what season of military life you find yourself in. Keep up the great work and remember that you can do hard things. Engage, educate, encourage. Army Wife Talk Radio is your source for military life empowerment. This is your Army Wife Network Command Team signing out.
Thank you for tuning in to Army Wife Talk Radio. The views and opinions expressed in our show are personal. AWTR is in no way affiliated with the Department of Defense or any other branch of the armed services, and inclusion in our show does not reflect endorsement by the DOD, any local government, or their agencies. Until the next episode, head over to www.armywifenetwork.com to connect with all of our empowering resources. Engage, educate, encourage. AWN is your source for military life empowerment.